Welcome to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. In this podcast, we'll explore trends, issues, and events surrounding Lutheran education. In each episode, we'll invite educational experts to shed light on topics that support educators, administrators, and staff. Thank you for listening to LSEM's Lutheran Education Podcast.
Welcome to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. It's a pleasure to have you back. My name is Richard Schumacher. I am the Senior Director of Operations at LSEM, and I'll be hosting today's podcast. And I am pleased to have with us today Kyle Churin. Kyle is the Elementary Education Coordinator at Concordia University Ann Arbor, and he's also got some work that he does with a company called Act Money Coaching. And so we're going to be talking a little bit about finances today and how we can help our teachers to better use the resources that God has given them. So Kyle, thank you. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
All right. So again, working at Concordia Ann Arbor, working in the School of Education, you get a chance to do a lot of stuff with students. Talk to me a bit about the job that you do at CUAA and the work that you're doing with students there.
Yeah, great. I love what I do at Concordia. It's just an awesome place. And I get to work, as you said, I'm the elementary education coordinator. So I get to work with the young people in our undergraduate program who are preparing to be teachers. I get an opportunity to teach all of our education students. But particularly I focus on those who are preparing for elementary education. So I oversee the elementary education program, so handle all of the things relating with, you know, State Department of Education and things like that. But then the fun part is I get to teach classes with our students, which is just awesome. I just love the young people that we have and just getting the opportunity to help them to learn and to grow. And then I also, as part of my responsibilities, place them in their student teaching, and many times we'll also supervise them in their student teaching, depending on where they're placed. So I get to go out and see them, kind of get to see it from beginning to end, you know, throughout their college experience, to see them grow into young adults who are out there and ready to go out and teach and impact young people out in the educational community.
And so over the course of that 4 or so years, I mean, you get to see kids coming in and really make a tremendous transformation, I'm sure, from, you know, a freshman, you know, just trying to figure out college and life and how all that's going to work. And then move from that point to becoming a teacher, learning pedagogy, learning best practice, all those different pieces, and then heading off into actually doing it in student teaching. So it's a great transition that you see happen with the kids there on a professional level. But I imagine it's also pretty cool to watch how those kids grow personally, how they you know, kind of leave behind the high schoolish ideas that they had back when they were, say, 18, as they, you know, are getting ready to depart by the time they, you know, they're 21, 22 years old. What's that like to see the growth personally in the students as well as professionally?
Honestly, it's probably that, along with how they grow spiritually. Those are probably some of the most rewarding parts of seeing it. Like you said, they kind of come in, many of them, I mean, they come in very a wide range of maturity and, you know, is teaching really what I want to do? Some are just maybe kind of checking it out, and some come in, they're already committed. They know this is exactly what they want to do. But yeah, seeing them grow, because one of the things we do in our program is we have them with having clinical experiences right away when they start the program. So they're out in schools, you know, in the case of my students in elementary schools, you know, the secondary students are out in high schools or middle schools. So we get them those experiences early, and we're always trying to promote in them that you're in those clinical experiences to impact the students in those classrooms. Even when you're just starting out and you're mainly observing, you know, trying to get them to in the mindset of what it means to be a professional. Mm-hmm. So we really promote professionalism. We promote a big part of our program, what we're really proud of, and it actually came out in our accreditation a couple of years ago as a strength of our program, is the focus on relationships. Because yes, it's important that you know your stuff. It's important that you know the pedagogy, but how you relate to your students, how you relate to their families is, you know, of utmost importance. And so promoting that, and that's one of the ways you really see them grow, is you see them kind of start to take on that role of a teacher and as a professional. And so, like I said, when I get to go supervise the student teachers and actually see it in action kind of full time. It's just super rewarding to see that level of growth.
We're talking with Kyle Churn on the podcast. So, Kyle, as these students get into the profession, I mean, obviously in church work, financially, the resources are limited, and so salaries are oftentimes lagging behind where you would have, say, a public school, salary, and in some cases, even what our districts will suggest as salary guides. Some of our congregations struggle to even keep up with those numbers. So again, we understand that from a financial standpoint, this is not a get rich quick scheme. It's just not. But again, those who go into the ministry understand that, and that's not the reason that they're doing it. But that said, it does place, I think, a higher level of importance on being smart about the resources that you do get, because obviously the margins are going to be a lot less in terms of extra cash that is students coming out. Talk about maybe some of the experiences that you might have had with some of your students in that regard. What are some of the things that you've seen students that have gone through programs or have just got started in ministry, what are they struggling with when it comes to making that transition into having their own family budgets?
Yeah, that's a great question. It really is. Everything you said is very true, and I think it's the reality because we talked about the growth during their time in their undergraduate work. Now all of a sudden they have to step out, and this is a whole different world and a whole different area of growth. Not just the money side of it, but for many of them, living in a place by themselves for the first time, or if they get married, living with their spouse for the first time, and having all these bills that they probably haven't had before. And so all of this is happening at the same time as you're a first year teacher, which, as you know, is probably one of the most challenging things that you
Oh,
can
yes.
do. Yeah,
Absolutely.
super challenging. And so you got all this thing, these things going on professionally. And for many of them, probably for most of them, honestly, I mean, I don't know all of their experiences, but there's also money stresses that go with it because they're also worried about paying the bills and they don't necessarily know unless their parents taught them. And what I'm finding is many people's parents don't really teach them much about money. So they're kind of left out there without really knowing what to do at all. And on top of it, not really making, like you said, not making a huge salary that can make up for some of your mistakes, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah, and I think even beyond that, you know how they always talk about that first year of teaching, the principal hands you a stack of books and a set of keys and says, have at it, and you're left professionally wondering, okay, now what? Financially, I would imagine it's very similar because again, they're expecting that, well, here's your paycheck. And so being able to balance paying off the bills and yeah, that paycheck's probably a lot bigger than you've ever seen coming through college as a student worker, but there's a lot of other places where that paycheck's got to go. Taxes, for one. I know for years and years, Synod has had to work very hard at explaining housing allowances and self-employment and those sorts of things, which, as veterans, we get because we've been dealing with this for, well, you're young, so maybe, 5 or 10 years, and some of us old guys like me, a lot longer. That said, we get it. We understand. And so we know the process. But those first couple of years coming out, man, lots of horror stories and people who, thought they were doing the right thing and just didn't know and then found themselves in a pretty bad situation. Any stories or relations that you can share as far as, folks finding themselves in that dire strait?
Actually, it's interesting you brought that up because before I had in my mind this idea of doing the money coaching, but I hadn't really started the business or anything or really developed it out. It was just kind of a thought, an idea at the time, and I was kind of exploring it. But I had a former student actually contact me for help with their taxes, and so I literally invited them over to my house. I said, "Bring everything you got. Let's just sit down, we'll have dinner and we'll walk through your taxes." And she was just so grateful for me doing that because she didn't know where to turn. And so
Sure.
that really, I think that was almost a turning point for me of like, yeah, there really is, there's a lot of need out there. And I'm not doing, taxes is not really the primary thing that I'm doing, but understanding that they just really, like you said, here's the books, go ahead and figure it out. And they're trying to figure it out on their own.
Yeah. I imagine, though, the taxes is probably that first real slap in the face in terms of the, oh, wait, this is different. And even different than the guy living next door to me, because, again, as a called worker, unless you get really lucky, you're not walking into the tax preparation company and just handing over your stuff and they're just going to automatically get it.
That's correct. I've had that experience. Early in my ministry, I had a tax person do my taxes for me, and they did them wrong because they didn't understand the whole ministry situation and how the housing allowance worked and all of that.
And again, if you don't know any better, they don't know any better. A year later, when it all blows up, bad place to be. I've seen it as well. So I can definitely appreciate that. So is it that idea of just helping new teachers coming into the ministry to get started in good financial footing? Is that really why the desire to start with ACT Money Coaching?
Well, that was part of it. And part of it was actually my own personal experience with my own finances.
Okay.
I wasn't the person who got, you know, I didn't have $50,000 of credit card debt or make really, really dumb decisions along the way. I made some dumb decisions. I think we all do.
Sure.
About probably 11 or 12 years ago, I discovered, even though he'd been there for a long time, Dave Ramsey's stuff. And that really kind of, it really resonated with me. And I started to just do some things with my own personal finances. Mm-hmm. And I started to think, you know, I was, you know, around 50 years old when I started doing that. And I started thinking, if I would have done this when I was 25, I'd be in such a better place now. And so it started just really tug at my heart, like, how can I help as many people as possible? And again, especially young teachers, because they're, you know, closest to my heart in what they're doing in their professions. How can I help them to make these decisions early on for a couple of reasons? One, so they don't get out of teaching because of money.
Yeah.
You know, I really don't want that to happen. If they love teaching and this is their passion and it's their calling and their ministry, I want them to be able to stay in that. And then actually, now as I'm getting closer to retirement, I'm thinking about the other end too. I want them to be able to get out of teaching when it's time, to not feel like sure. They have to keep teaching for a paycheck, you know, somewhere down the road, that if they're, when it's time to be done, they don't have to worry about money. They, you know, are secure. So really all of those things kind of work together to make me say, you know, I need to do something about this. It was, like I said, I was tugging at my heart enough that I was like, I got to help somebody. And, you know, I can't help everybody, but if I can try to help a few, you know, maybe I can have an impact.
Okay. We're talking with Cal Churin, elementary education coordinator at Concordia Ann Arbor and owner of ACT Money Coaching.
Yeah, I would call myself the founder and the money coach. I'm the guy. I'm it.
All right. So let me ask you this question then. You talked about, again, your own experiences starting out, and I don't want to delve into specifics. So let me frame it this way. If the Kyle Churin of today could have 15 minutes to talk to the Kyle Churin in that summer between graduation and your first teaching job, what two or three things would you say to yourself to maybe change the course of history for you?
That is a great question. I've never thought of it that way. I mean, I've thought about a lot of things related to that, but that's a great question. I think the biggest thing that I would tell myself is you need to have a plan. Because I know I didn't have a plan. I just kind of was winging it. And I think that's what a lot of people are doing. Mm-hmm. You need to have a plan. I think the other thing I would tell myself is, and I was never big on this, but I think we all do this to some degree, is don't try to compare yourself to somebody else. Don't worry about what your car looks like compared to somebody else's car, or what your house looks like compared to somebody else's house. Because one of the things I've learned in studying financial things and research and things like that is a lot of times the people who look the wealthiest aren't, and vice versa. Sometimes the people who don't look all that wealthy actually have got, you know, they've got it all figured out. They're just not flaunting it. So I think those would be two big things. And I think also, I remember being young and I see this in some of my clients that I've worked with, is trying to figure out, like, what's the secret? You know, I think I would tell myself there is no secret. It's very simple. But you have to do some simple things and do them consistently over time to put yourself in a better financial position. And it's going to, and there's struggles. There's going to be struggles, especially when you're not making a ton of money, but there's struggles for people, even for people who do make a ton of money, if they make poor decisions. So it's a process. And I think if I would have been able to see that when I was younger, kind of like I was saying before, I could have just made some simple decisions early on that would have had a huge impact later.
So the name of the business is ACT Money Coaching. Now, I have to admit, money coaching is not a phrase that I've heard before. That's not something that I've seen, TV commercials or radio ads where we're talking about money coaching. I've heard financial planning. I've heard financial advising. But what you're saying is what you do here is different than that. So what's the difference between the two, and what's the significance for money coaching?
Great question. So most people, when they hear, well, I use the term money coach. A lot of people do use that are in this industry that I'm in. And it's a fairly new industry, actually. So it's probably why maybe you haven't heard about it. But a lot of people do use the term financial coach. The reason I don't use financial coach is kind of just what you were alluding to there is, you know, a lot of people, if I say I'm a financial coach, they equate it to a financial advisor. So the difference is most financial advisors, they're dealing with investments or maybe insurance, annuities, things like that. So one of the things I tell my clients right away is what I don't do is I don't give specific investment advice, and I'm not qualified to. So I can't say go invest in this stock or go invest in this thing. So I'm not doing that. I'm also not selling any products. I'm not selling financial products. I'm not selling insurance like a lot of financial advisor kinds of people do, which also means I'm not making commissions off of anything. So many of those other other financial areas, they're making commissions off of the products that they sell and the work that they do. So my income comes entirely from, I tell my clients, you're paying for my time to help you through these things. So really what I am doing, I'm not doing those things. What I am doing is working with my clients to talk about their attitudes about money, to learn a little bit about that. So how do you approach money? You know, some people are more savers, some are more spenders, kind of learn a little bit about them and their relationship with money, how they deal with money, to look at their current situation. So we do a deep dive into their numbers. How much money do you have? How much money are you spending? And really look very closely at that and help them to see their own picture of where they're at right now financially. But then also talk about what are your goals for money? What are your short-term goals? What do you hope to accomplish in the next few months? What do you hope to accomplish, you know, maybe a year from now or 3 years from now or way down the road? You know, we can even talk about retirement when they're 25. So I try to help them see all of those things. And initially, in most cases, it's coming up with a budget, a plan. I prefer the term spending plan to budget because it sounds less restrictive, maybe.
Sure. Yeah.
But helping them, literally sitting with them and sketching out what should this look like. And I always tell them, I'm not going to tell you what to do with your money, but I'm going to help you see things. So maybe you're spending $400 a month eating out and you're only making $2,000 a month. Do you really want to spend 20% of your income every month on, you know, going to restaurants? Does that help you meet your goals and your priorities? So I really try to help them see their own situation so that they can start to prioritize and make decisions based on that picture that we kind of create together.
We're talking with Kyle Churin. A lot of the kids coming out of school, are you seeing that they're being more financially conscious? I mean, is this something that's on their radars to try and start out in a good way? Or are you seeing more of them kind of, you know, going through that, well, I'll just kind of figure it out as I go and then hope for the best?
I think what I'm seeing mostly is financially conscious, but I see it mostly as I'm worried. Because so many of them, as we all know, I mean, it's, you hear it all the time, so many of them are coming out with student loan debt. Sure. And in some cases, very huge amounts of student loan debt. So I think they're aware that there's a situation here. I don't think, in many cases, they're not fully aware of what that means, like how much debt they got into and how this is going to impact them down sure. the road. But I think there's at least an awareness that I need to do something about this.
It just seems like, again, we know that the loan process, I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole in terms of student loans sort of thing, because again, the cost of college is what it is. And again, even at that point, making those good decisions while in college. So I don't know, maybe this is a marketing idea or a thought that you can take, but what sort of counseling are we seeing for our students while they're still students? I know back when I was going through and taking out some loans to get through my own college experience, the amount that the bank or the lender would give you didn't always have to match the exact amount that you needed to pay for college. And so I know of some folks that, well, let's just take a little more or a little more and think, well, this will help me get by without having that knowledge of, yeah, that extra thousand might be helpful now, but that extra thousand is going to end up costing me a thousand plus on the backside. Are there ways to reach some of those students while they're in college to help make some better decisions, so that way they put themselves in a better position when they first start out?
Yeah, that's a great point. It's like you're paying an 8% surcharge on your Starbucks,
Exactly.
right?
Exactly.
So I did a number of years back, it was pre-COVID, I did teach a personal finance kind of workshop at Concordia. I have not done it since. I really think it probably needs to be resurrected. I just had a few students in it. We didn't have a lot of time. I was asked to do it, and we didn't have a lot of time to really promote it with students. I have a few colleagues I've talked to who are like, we need to make, there needs to be like a required course on this stuff for students. And I tend to agree with that. I mean, we need to find a way to educate them. So I think it's something, it's kind of on my radar. I'm glad you brought it up. I'm trying to focus initially on getting those graduates and getting kind of building my system for working with them. But I could definitely see that. How can we front load it? How can we give them some education earlier on so that they, when they do step in, it would, if nothing else, it would at least raise that consciousness that you talked about.
Yeah, and again, from my perspective on it, again, you nailed it on the head earlier when you talked about so many kids who want to go into education and would be phenomenal teachers in our Lutheran schools get out and they have to make a hard decision because they've made decisions that have put them in a place where I can't stay in a Lutheran school because I need that extra salary. And so that public school salary looks a lot more enticing. And post-COVID, we've seen so much poaching from private schools because the public schools are looking for teachers. And it's hard to stare down a sizable salary increase and be able to say, no, the ministry is more important. So having those skills in place, I think, serves the synod, very well in terms of we're keeping as many qualified, excellent Lutheran educators in the Lutheran education system and not letting something that like you said, like financial worries, be another deterrent for keeping them there.
And I would also love to see, because you know this, many times, I don't know what the percentage is, but many times the students who come to us at Concordia for education, they're at least one of their parents is a teacher or a principal, or they're in education or they're in ministry, maybe they're a pastor, things like that. So I would love to see, and I won't live to see it, but I would love to see the students I work with be in a position where they can help their own children enough so that they're not going into debt to kind of break the cycle a little bit. I would love to know I at least had some hand in trying to do that.
So again, if you're listening to this podcast and you know of somebody, whether it's your own child, a nephew, a friend's kid who's thinking about going into education, again, offer up that advice. Be open, be willing to share your own experiences, the good and the bad, but direct folks to folks like Kyle who can say, hey, I've got some ideas on how to help you out before you even get started, and then definitely after you get out of college and you're heading into your ministry career. So this is a good time to take a break. On the other side, we'll get into some more of the specific services that Kyle offers as a part of his ACT Money coaching and give you some opportunity to get information to connect with Kyle in case this is something that you think would benefit. But we're pleased to be talking with Kyle Turin about all things finance here on the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries.
Lutheran Special Education Ministries is an organization committed to serving schools, churches, and families to advance the success of children who have learning needs. Our commitment to this mission began with the opening of the Lutheran School for the Deaf in Detroit. Over the years, our ministry has expanded, and today LSEM is proud to serve in Lutheran schools across the country. But as our ministry has grown, our commitment to helping students succeed academically in an environment where they can also grow spiritually is as strong as ever. So if your church or school is looking for professional development for your faculty, information to share with struggling families, or for a ministry partner to support an existing resource room or start a new one, LSEM is ready to help you meet your specialized learning goals. For more information about how LSEM can help you build brighter futures for your students, please contact us at 248-419-3390 or visit our website at www.luthsped.org. That's www.luthsped.org.
And welcome back to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by LSEM. Continuing the conversation with Kyle Churin. He is, again, the Elementary Education Coordinator at Concordia University in Ann Arbor. He also is the owner, founder, and manager, driving force behind ACT Money Coaching. So, Kyle, I failed to ask at the beginning. We talked about what you do at Concordia and a little bit about the program there, but we didn't ask about Kyle. What's your backstory? Where are you from? Where have you served in ministry and the different steps that you've taken to get to this place today?
Well, I grew up in metropolitan Detroit, St. Clair Shores, actually. I'm probably your typical Lutheran school teacher who went to Lutheran Elementary School. St. Thomas in what was East Detroit at that time. Now it's East Point. Mm-hmm. Went to Lutheran High School East in Harper Woods, which is not there anymore, unfortunately. And I'm actually an alum of Concordia Ann Arbor. So that's where I did my undergraduate work. And let's see, what was the rest? Oh, so ministry. So if I tell you all the places I was in ministry, it might take the rest of the time, but I can try to do it quickly because it's interesting. I share this a lot and I'll share this with my students sometimes. My average place in one time in one place in ministry was about 4 or 5 years. And that was never by design. It always just kind of happened that another different opportunity that God pushed me to. And I always was wondering why, because we were moving. It seemed like we were always moving. Like we just got the boxes unpacked and then we were packing them back up and moving again. It seemed that way. It wasn't quite like that. But when I got into the role at Concordia, working with these future teachers, I really was able to see the benefit of having all those experiences leading up to that. And so the why made sense. You know, we often say we don't really understand God's plan until much later. And that's really true for my ministry. So I started out, I was a music major and an English minor. So I started out primarily as a music teacher. I was in Southern Illinois at Metro East Lutheran High School, and I also did band programs at the elementary schools while I was there. From there, I took a call to St. John's Lutheran in Marysville, Ohio, which I know you're familiar with, Rich. That's where I got to meet your lovely wife. We were teachers together on the faculty there in Marysville. Great formative experience for me there. From there, I got a call up to St. Peter's in East Point, which is where I taught there for a couple of years and then for 3 years. And the third year I was an assistant principal also. So that was kind of my transition into administration. So then I went out to Baltimore Lutheran, which is now called Concordia Preparatory School in Towson, Maryland, where I was the upper school principal. And then I also had an amazing opportunity to start a new school there, which was called Harford Lutheran School. From there, I got a call to Cleveland, Ohio. Fairview Park, specifically suburb of Cleveland, where I was a principal at Messiah Lutheran Church and School, was there for 6 years. So from Messiah, then I got a call to St. Peter Lutheran back in Michigan. That's when I came back to Michigan back in 2010. St. Peter Macomb Lutheran School there, preschool through eighth grade, great school. And while I was at St. Peter, I got the call to Concordia. Now this is my 10th year at Concordia, which is hard to believe. But that's my path. It's quite a winding path.
So now, just curious, again, the role that they're in both at Concordia and with ACT Money Coaching, obviously trying to provide influence, looking to help influence the next generation of educators, both in the classroom and here with ACT Money outside of the classroom. Anybody in your past who, again, was that powerful influencer on you to keep you in ministry, to get you on the right track in on a day perhaps where you needed it? But was there somebody in your past or somebodies in your past who you look back to as being that influence?
There's a lot of great influences. And I think anybody who works in ministry would say the same thing. But the number one is a person that you know would be Herb Mock, who was our principal at St. John's in Marysville, Ohio, because he just had a way. I bring him up all the time. In fact, I share with my students my Mount Rushmore, and Herb's one of my people, on my Mount Rushmore. He just had such a heart for ministry. He had a great sense of humor, loved what he did, and loved his students, you know. And so I just learned so much from him that he would be the one I would definitely hold up as my number one influence. Herb was just a great man. And I often tell the story of when I was teaching there. I was a pretty young teacher still. I was less than 10 years teaching when I was there. So between 5 and 10, the time I was there. Herb comes up to me one day after school or whatever, and he says, I need you to help me teach Bible study. And I'm like, okay, because he always taught adult Bible study Sunday morning between services. So I'm like, okay, yeah, I never said no to Herb. He was the boss. So I was like, okay. And then he says to me, you need to be at my house at 8 a.m. on Saturday. You know, I'm like 30 years old. I was like, 8 a.m. on Saturday? He's like, yep, that's when I prepare for Bible study. So I don't remember for how long, but every Saturday at 8 a.m., I was at Herb's house and we were preparing for Bible study. And this is one of those things, again, when you look back on it, you understand it a lot better. Herb did not need my help to teach Bible study. But those were some of the best moments where, you know, we studied the word together and he mentored me in so many ways. I just learned so much drinking coffee in his office 8 a.m. on Saturday mornings.
And again, I totally agree with you on Herb. Never had the chance to know him professionally. Only got a chance to meet him after he'd retired. But every story that I've ever heard about Herb, yes, the pranks and the practical joke and the sense of humor is always part of it. But there was a seriousness about what he did. He took ministry seriously, and he was disciplined about it. And he expected the folks that he worked with to have that same level of discipline. Have all the fun you can with it, but be excellent about it. You know, don't cut corners and make sure that you're going about it the right way and practicing things so that way it'll pay that benefit. And again, in hearing that, it's obvious to me and perhaps to anybody listening who knew Herb that, yeah, that makes sense then that something like, you know, the money coaching aspect would click, because that's what that is. It's that same making good choices and being disciplined and looking at things from a rational approach as opposed to maybe the emotional approach. You know, do I want to go to that concert? Sure. But is it financially feasible? Maybe, maybe not. So that's an awkward segue into where I want to go with this. But I think it's still a good one just because, again, I see the connection there. So when it comes to coaching, I imagine as you go through the process, and you talked about it a little bit, but maybe some of those initial meetings you're having with new teachers are similar to a Saturday morning, 8 a.m. Bible study coffee session with Herb. What do those look like? How do those get started, and what are you doing there?
Yeah. So the first thing we do is once I find, you know, somebody that's wanting to move forward and do the coaching, I call it act one, getting your financial act together. That's the first big session that we do. But before the session, I have them fill out, and I do either individuals or couples. It can work either way. I have them fill out some prep work. So one is a survey that I have them do. And I kind of mentioned that before about just kind of learning about their attitudes about money. You know, what are they doing right now? What's working? What's not working? What are their stressors? things like that. Just sort of learning a little bit about that. And then they fill out it's a spreadsheet with all of their information. And they share that with me. So when we meet, it's about a 2-hour meeting. I actually had one last night, and we actually went over a little bit. So the actual meeting, it's very interesting to see how, you know, personalities obviously play into this. The individual I was working with last night was very, had a lot of dreams about what they want to do with money. So in that case, I was like, okay, slow down. Those are great. We want to talk about your dreams, but we really got to focus on getting this part taken care of, and then we can move toward those dreams. So it's really working through. It's not a canned program at all. It can't be, because it's very personalized. It's very individualized. Even though I have some specific things that I want to be able to address in that first session, I have some themes that I want to make sure I touch on. What I really want more than anything is at the end that I understand their situation, that they, like I said earlier, have a clearer picture of their own situation. And then they also walk out with some very specific things, a plan that they can use at least to start with to move forward. I always tell them, this is not a fully developed plan. And even if you have a really good budget, it's going to take you several months to really get it nailed down where it's really working, and you really know what you're spending and how your money is or is not covering your expenses. So we really try to work through that. And I give them hopefully at least enough tools that they can leave that session more confident about their money. And like I said, with a plan that they can follow, and they're going to have to adjust it and adapt it, but they kind of know how to do that.
So you mentioned that some of the inspiration for getting into money coaching kind of was sparked by your connection to getting kind of knowledgeable about Dave Ramsey and some of his practices. And again, I think most people have a general idea of what Dave's ideas are and philosophies are. So I don't want to necessarily get into him. It's good stuff, but I don't want to necessarily, talk into that. But in your application of that, are there a couple of things that you have seen that you would recommend that maybe, I don't want to say contradict what Dave is saying, I guess I'll go there, the credit card use, he's very much, don't get into credit card debt, stay out of credit cards. I think a lot of folks will look at what he says and says, yes, I see the basis, but the reality of life in 2024 is it's really hard to live completely without a credit card. So what other things like that have you maybe seen that you talk to your clients about that kind of, try to take some of those practices, but also, take some other real life situations into account that maybe contradict?
Yeah, that's a great question. I like you said, I love Dave Ramsey's stuff, but in my coaching, I am not trying to require or expect or preach to my clients the 7 baby steps, which are awesome. They helped me. They've helped thousands, probably millions of people by now. Dave's been doing that for so long. But I also look at other people in other philosophies and other theories. And part of what made me think about different ways to do this actually is talking to my own adult children about their own finances. And they don't want me to coach them for obvious reasons. But talking to them about Dave Ramsey's system, because that's kind of what I would, when they were younger, I would tell them, this is what you need to do. Here's the 7 baby steps. And I noticed how they, as they're all millennials, how they kind of come at it a little bit differently. So part of it is, would be like an example would be, well, you mentioned the credit cards. I'm not a big fan of credit cards, but I have a couple. So I'm obviously not, Dave, don't crucify me, Dave. But I use them very, very judiciously, and I don't use them. One of the big mistakes is, well, I'm using my credit card so I can get the points, the reward points. That's such a minor thing, and that's not a good reason to use a credit card. There might be some other reasons why you could, but in general, would I steer people away from credit card use? Yes. I was working with a client recently who did not have a credit card, and they're like, do you think I should get a credit card so I can start to build my credit? And I said, no. I said, maybe at some point down the road, the answer might be yes, but you need to get on solid financial ground And then if you get a credit card, you're going to decide how you're going to use it so that you're not going to get yourself into trouble. Because as we all know, too many people have gotten in trouble with that. Another example would be one of the philosophies in Ramsey is, you always pay cash for your car. And I do that now. I think that's a great principle. However, when I'm looking at a teacher who's making $30,000 and they need a car, is it okay for them to take out a small loan to get a car? I think it can be if it's part of the plan, that there's a plan for how we're going to pay this off. We're not going to buy a brand new car and it's going to take us 8 years to pay it off or anything like that. So it's again, it's all within the total package of what's your financial picture. So I think there's, I try to be flexible with that. And in the whole thing of, like I said before, I'm not telling my clients what to do. I'm going to allow them some room to make some decisions that maybe aren't the best, and they're going to learn from them. And then we're going to look at it the next month and say, so was that a good decision? Do you want to adjust that? Do you want to pay less than you are for, like the example I used before, eating out or whatever it is?
Talking with Kyle Churin, again, looking at finance and money, just helping new teachers in particular to be able to better manage their funds to get them to that place where retirement is something that's doable. And I really love that. And I, in all the prep for this, didn't think about that side of it. But again, it's one thing to get the students through into their careers and get started on good financial ground, but retirement does come. And again, a lot of us joke that, well, I'll be that guy who's, dead propped up in the teaching chair, so that my wife can still pick up the paychecks. But it doesn't have to be that way. We really don't want it to be that way. And so is there anything that you're coaching the newer teachers to do, how to get them thinking about, hey, what can I be doing today that's going to pay off for me 40, 45 years down the road when I am ready to give up teaching?
Right. So it's as I mentioned before, that those simple things done early can have a huge impact later. So part of the Act One session is having goals. So one of the things I would like a simple example of what I might do with a client who was continuing with me. This would not happen in the first session, but we would maybe look at, I would show them, and they're all over the internet, but I would show them a chart of if you invest $100 in the stock market for 30 years. If you do it $100 a month for 30 years, by the, you'll be a millionaire. You'll have $1 million if the stock market just does what it's done historically. And so trying to show them those kinds of things, because when you're 25, you're not thinking that way necessarily. And I wish somebody would have showed me that. So it's the stepping back, having those bigger goals, because a lot of times when I talk to them about their goals for money, it's I want to travel right now. They're not talking about retirement. They're talking about they want to travel. Or maybe they do want to buy. I had a client recently who said, I'd love to have a sports car. Okay. Well, I'm not saying you can't have a sports car, but I wouldn't recommend buying one now. So what would it take to be able to do that? So one of the other things I teach clients, if they continue with me, again, this is not in the first session, but there's a budgeting method that I learned from the training that I did. I'm actually part of something called the Financial Coach Academy. A lady named Kelsa Dickey is the person who founded that. She was started out as a money coach, just like I am, and then developed it into a business where she's coaching coaches and training coaches. So I took her training program, but one of the things she developed was something called the Plan Ahead method. And what the plan ahead method does is it helps you can do it anything from, I mean, you can do 3 months, 6 months, even a year out. So instead of just having a monthly budget, you can project out with that budget what it's going to look like. So for example, if you're trying to pay off your student loans and we work on this plan ahead method and we see where there's some extra money that we can apply to that student loan, we can look at, like, in a year, if you keep doing this, you will have knocked off whatever it is. Maybe you'll have knocked off $5,000 off of that loan just by taking these small steps. So It's, you know, the first part is really, let's get the snapshot of where we are now. Let's make some small steps. And then if they continue working with me, try to get them to take that bigger, you know, bigger view of what it might look like down the road.
Excellent. Kyle, lots of good information that you have, that you're sharing with clients, with students. If anybody listening to the podcast were interested in connecting with you, what's the best way for them to be able to do that?
There's really three ways. One would be Facebook. I do have, I haven't been posting much on there yet. This is my part-time job. So, but I do have ACT Money Coaching. There is a Facebook page, so you could easily connect with me there. I'm hoping to start posting some more things there as well. But I'm also on LinkedIn. So Kyle Churan, C-H-U-H-R-A-N, if you can just search for me there, you can find me there. My email for the for ACT Money Coaching is Kyle, K-Y-L-E, dot Churan, C-H-U-H-R-A-N, at actmoneycoaching.com. So you can just email me there. And again, if anybody's interested, the first step is really just that 15-minute Q&A call. We just get on the phone. We just talk a little bit. I'm not pressuring people. I'm just finding out what their situation is, see if they're a good fit for me. And I kind of share with them what I do, see if it's a good fit, and see if they want to move forward with some coaching.
Excellent. Kyle, can't thank you enough for taking the time to talk with us again. Thank you for the work that you're doing, preparing students at CUAA for a life in ministry. And again, whether they're teaching in Lutheran schools or our public schools, charter schools, where it's ministry, they're still sharing the love of God, the joy that Christ brings into our lives through everything that they say and do, directly or indirectly, and you're helping to prepare them for that. So thank you for that. And again, for this very specific but very important piece of helping our teachers to be able to better manage those resources so they can enjoy the blessings that God is giving them. So again, thank you very much, and blessings on your continued work.
Thanks, Rich. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today.
So again, if you're looking for more information, reach out to the places that Kyle has shared with you and connect with him. Otherwise, thank you again for your time to listen to the podcast. We definitely appreciate all our folks that listen to the podcast. Please continue to like and subscribe in all those places where you're listening. Thanks to Dave Klonke, our producer extraordinaire, who has got so much money, he doesn't need any of the advice that that Kyle is sharing today. He's sipping champagne as we record. No, not really. But thank you, Dave. Appreciate everything you do for us. And thank you for listening to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries.
Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. For more information on this episode's topic or any other questions regarding Lutheran education or Lutheran Special Education Ministries, please feel free to contact us at 248-419-3390 or visit our website at www.luthsped.org. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Yes, I